What's up, Conference USA fans? Welcome into another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Yonas, serving as your host once again this week, and we had a lot to talk about. Another big episode. We're going to be talking a lot more Jack State, believe it or not. We will have Jacksonville State bowler Gianna Brandolino joining us later in the show. We'll have Elizabeth Kanzig and our staff making her CUSA Insider debut. But before we get there, got to introduce Eric Jones, Associate Director of Communications again. Eric, thanks for coming back on.
It's always a pleasure. We're 3 weeks now into conference baseball season. It's been some good games, especially over this last weekend. Excited to see where things are going here.
Yeah, and like I said, what a time to be a Gamecock fan. We'll get into some more later with softball and bowling to preview where they're going for regionals. But had a little bit of history by the Gamecocks baseball team. What was going on this week?
Yeah, did a lot of digging in the record book. It's crazy to think that, you know, we've had a lot of history in the baseball side of things, very traditional, tradition rich, conference baseball, league. And, we've never had a team sweep their first three series of conference play ever.
That's nice.
Starting 9-0. And Jack State did that over the weekend. And, you know, yesterday I was, all morning long trying to find old schedule. I mean, I went all the way back to 1996, finding South Florida, couldn't even find their schedule anywhere. But, you know, the incredible feat. A lot of teams started 8-1, winning, eight of their first nine games. And it's an incredible feat. I mean, it's so hard to win series in general, especially on the road. And you go do it and you're doing it in dominant fashion, really. They're 24-5 overall now. Things weren't looking great for them yesterday. They had to kind of work their way back, I think down 4-0 there in the middle to late innings at Louisiana Tech, and never an easy place to play as well. So kudos to Coach Beezer and company going on the road, getting another series sweep, especially after dropping a midweek game. They want those just as bad as they want these conference series. So Eli Pillsbury, got to talk about him Friday night, setting the tone on the week. They win 4-0 on Friday night. He went six innings of scoreless baseball, 12 strikeouts, a career high. Incredible work from him. We talk about this lineup too. A bunch of veteran guys. They got five guys hitting above 300. Blauser, Pate, Johnson, Williamson. Like, all these guys are producing right now. And you can tell the camaraderie in this lineup, in this bunch, in the clubhouse. Something surely is clicking. But going back to Pillsbury, I mean, this dude is unreal right now. He's top in the nation in ERA. He's got it down to sub one ERA now, 0.091, through his first seven starts. So incredible stuff from Jack State. They'll be back home this weekend against Middle Tennessee. And we'll kind of, now that they got this kind of knowing what type of history they're putting together, you can just hope that they keep rolling, keep their head down. Again, they're a veteran group, so hopefully they can keep doing that. But excited to see where this leads them. Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, because we know what they did last year. They were, innings away from potentially going to the NCAA tournament. And so what do you think the biggest change for them is, from last year to this year? Is it that veteran, just kind of mentality? You get an extra year under your belt, keeping those core guys together?
I think for sure. You look at the leadership with the bunch, too. And I think Coach Beezer's done a good job. He's coached at, in the SEC. He knows what it's like to be one of the best and go against the best. And, they were, again, just a few, inches, moments, innings, outs away from winning a CUSA title after being picked near the bottom of the league last year. And here they are, I think, bringing all these guys back, knowing how close they were to winning and knowing kind of what it takes to get there at this point, too. They're just all in right now, and they're grinding and they're winning games, and that's all that matters. And impressive, like they've already played two road series and swept those two road series. It's not even like they played majority of their conference games at home. So they've been very, very fun to watch, and they have Alabama at home tomorrow night or Tuesday night. So very interested to watch that one. Definitely will be tuning in. And you never know what can happen in midweeks. Sometimes you get those high scoring, 15-14 games. And so hopefully we can see the Gamecocks on the good side of that.
Yeah, yeah. We were just talking about midweek games before we hopped on here. Missouri State's got a big one welcoming in Arkansas. Kind of leads me into, I know one of the other series we mentioned last week was a huge one right up the road from us. Missouri State playing at Dallas Baptist, kind of rekindling an old Missouri Valley rivalry. And I can remember, you know, from my time as a GA, I'm sure Dane has plenty of stories too from when he was at DBU. I mean, that is a heated rivalry, like lots of just slugfests in that series, lots of high pressure games. So, you know, they get a chance to get back at it against each other. And you got a chance to go out there Friday night, right? Yeah.
It was a great time. And we actually got out there a little bit early, took in some BP and got to talk with some of the Missouri State staff, coach, and even the DBU guys, of course. It was fun to listen to them talk about their old, you know, Missouri Valley days and their rivalry. And, you know, they were certainly excited to be back with each other, just to see, you know, it's two, again, like just tradition rich ball clubs going at it. And it certainly was a great, great game. It was freezing and it felt like I was in a wind tunnel. I was trying to find any sort of space I could get. But Liam Watt looked really good Friday night for DBU. I know he's been their best arm all year. He hasn't been their Friday night guy per se, but they gave him a shot on Friday night and he delivered for sure. The line may not look as great. I think he ended up giving up four runs on his final line, but he went seven strong innings. His first six were really, really, really strong. And, you know, Missouri State got to him a little bit and the DBU ended up hanging on to win that game and ended up winning the series as well, which was a huge series for DBU. Now, it may not feel like it. They're 6-3 right now, but they've won all three of their series so far this year. They haven't swept anybody yet, but again, winning series in conference play is what you want to do. Keep stacking those up and you'll be at the right, you know, a right point of the standings. But Missouri State, you know, they looked great too. Saturday, the bats came alive. I think they ended up winning that one 8-2. And then yesterday, it was a back and forth affair. Missouri State leading for most of the game and DBU had a big inning to take the lead there, ended up winning 8-5, I believe, and taking that big rubber match here in Dallas. But certainly I had to get out there at least one of the days. It was a super fun time. But even to look at a few more of the series we had over the weekend, Liberty sweeping FIU, that was a big one for them. Ben Blair and Bradley Zayak, just two guys that have been workhorses on the mound for Liberty and on a Friday and a Sunday. I think those are, you know, all three games are big, but first game and last game are always, you think of it as the biggest games of the weekend, depending on how everything. So you want to set the tone and you also want to finish the weekend strong. So I think those two guys and the roles that they're in are doing a great job. Kennesaw State going on the road to beat Delaware, swept them. Bats came alive, looked really good at the plate. And then Middle Tennessee, after losing, you know, the series last week, bouncing back and sweeping New Mexico State. Two really pesky teams. I got to watch a little bit of that game yesterday and New Mexico State would not go away. I think Middle was up 9-3 in the ninth. And New Mexico State trimmed it to 9-6, I believe, but it was like, I think tying run ended up coming to the plate after being down six going into the top half of the ninth. So, wow. Some great series. I think I hit them all. Sam Houston. They, took a big series from WKU, the reigning, conference tournament champions.
And you talk about setting the tone.
Ryan
Peterson certainly answered the call. Yeah.
Got to talk about our pitcher of the week. Ryan Peterson, a complete game, one hit shutout of the Hilltoppers on Friday night. This dude, definitely not talked about enough. And I love getting to, I think I got to watch him pitch a couple of years ago when he was a freshman. And it's kind of the same. Him and Ben Blair are kind of in that same sort of feel right now where they're juniors this year. It's their draft year. And you can just tell how much they've grown confidence-wise, what kind of pitches work best for them against these lineups. It's never an easy out on a Friday night in Conference USA, but Ryan Peterson was incredible on Friday night. And he had six strikeouts, pretty efficient, over 111 pitches. Four walks. But the big, I mean, in a 1-0 win, then that zero is the biggest part right there. And I know that Coach Sirianni's got a lot of trust in him, and I don't think it was his game. I don't think he was giving that ball to anybody else. This was his game to finish, and had to be pitcher of the week. But it's been really fun to see some of the starting pitching in this league this year. I think has surprised me, especially knowing how good of a hitting league this is. It's been super special to watch some of these top arms in our league.
Yeah, and it's made our decisions for, you know, pitchers of the week extremely difficult, because we see a lot of really good outings, and I kind of reflect back on, you know, the first month or so of the season now, and, you know, Ryan Peterson is always in the conversation, right? Because he'd have all these amazing outings, and just the team outcomes weren't really coming his way, and you know, maybe wasn't getting as much run support, or, you know, giving up some spot runs that just kind of did him in. But yeah, gets it done this week, goes the distance, look great, and so he was definitely warranted this week. But any other what are some big series we have coming up? I know we had a couple really big ones this past week, but I'm sure every week's gonna bring some good ones.
Always got some good ones. Looking at the midweeks too, we got some big midweek matchups. New Mexico State, who took the first meeting from New Mexico early in the year, big rivalry. This one shifting to Albuquerque now, so New Mexico State gets a chance to go on the road and get another big rivalry win. Let's see who else. Liberty's at NC State. We all know the success that they had last year against ACC opponents. Would love to see the Flames, after a big weekend, go into Raleigh and get a big win. Sam Houston playing at A&M. Again, kind of same story. Would love to see a team coming off a big weekend series win go on the road and do some damage at A&M. Jack State, as I mentioned, playing at home against Alabama. And Missouri State hosting number 17 Arkansas tomorrow night. Should be good stuff. DVU is hosting Oklahoma State as well. So some big midweek matchups this week. But I think the series that I'm looking at the most right now, I got to keep my eyes on Jack State. I think Middle Tennessee is a much better team than they were last year. I think Coach Myers has done a really good job with them, turning that around a little bit. So excited to see how Jack State does, obviously coming off this historic start. But I'm also looking at Sam Houston going on the road to Missouri State. Missouri State back home after a series loss that, you know, they wanted really bad. I know Coach Hawkins is going to have the guys ready to go at home. That should be another really good one to watch.
All right. Sweet. Well, shifting gears a little bit, let's talk a little bit of softball before we get into our interview segment and our bowling regional preview. Again, it's the same conversation, right? It's Jack State at the top right now. First USA team to sweep FIU at home since 2022. Yeah. And we've talked year in, year out how well FIU plays at home. This year they were 18-2 to begin the year. Jack State, you know, we talked to Morgan Nowakowski. They came in. Their mentality was, you know, we're winning the series. And so for them to walk in, sweep them in three games that, you know, on paper might look like Jack State won these pretty handily, 9-3 on Friday, 3-1 Saturday, 7-4 on Sunday. I mean, these were dogfight games. So definitely did not come super easy. I talked last week about walks being a big X factor in this series. FIU pitching staff had 8 walks, 8 strikeouts. So, I mean, when you have a 1-to-1 ratio. Now, again, it wasn't maybe as inflated as Jack State would have expected it to be. We talked to how well they are at drawing walks, but still, you know, holding that ratio way lower than FIU likes it to be. And kind of going back to, you know, where those just kind of situationally where those walks were, the one that really jumped out to me in the opener, 2 walks in a 3-run fourth inning. So that really just kind of blew the game open for the Gamecocks. That was the one that, you know, kind of came the most, came the easiest for them, 9-3 on Friday. So, again, we've already said a few times, setting the tone, I think that really played a part in it. CUSA Player of the Week, Aria Davis, hit 400 over the weekend, team high 4 RBIs. She had a pair of big home runs, one on Saturday, one on Sunday. Jalea Holmes, you know, we talked a lot about McKenna Moore last week, and she's gotten a lot of attention in terms of our weekly awards, but Jalea Holmes has really settled in as the number 2 arm for the Gamecocks so far in league play. You look at her line here, 3-0, 0.94 ERA, 3 complete games and 3 starts, holding opponents to .182 batting average. So, really just kind of in the shadows of a lot of the other players on this Jack State team that are doing some great things. She's performing really well. She's kind of again, all 3 weeks of league play, she's pitched in that Saturday role. So right in the middle of the series. And so for them to, you know, again, there's still a lot of softball to be played, but you, as you kind of get closer to the conference tournament, you have to start thinking, you know, you're going to have to get real creative with your pitching. So to have a number two arm like that is going to be really key for Jacksonville State. Because I look around the rest of the league and, you know, everyone else has, you know, that one pitcher. You know, you got your Allie Floyds of the world. Missouri State has an Emily Coranda, who is our freshman of the week, who throws a lot of innings for them. A Faith Aragon for New Mexico State. But it's having that second arm when, you know, when your ace is gassed on, you know, day four or five of that conference tournament, that you need to turn to and get a good start. So shout out to Julia Holmes. Had another great start for the Gamecocks in that big sweep of FIU. They've now got a 2-game lead on top of the softball standings. The other series that I, you know, had a close eye on, WKU taking 2 of 3 from New Mexico State in a key battle for that fourth spot in the standings, handed the Aggies their first home series, CUSA home series loss in nearly a year. I think it was April 11th, 13th of 2025. And we warned against, you know, what the Topps pitching staff would look like playing out in that kind of environment. Mm-hmm. You know, it shaped up to be a little ugly after the opener, got run ruled 8-0 in a 5-inning game. But, you know, I will credit, you know, Coach Amy Tudor and this Topps team for really taking that one on the chin and then answering on Saturday and Sunday with a 7-5 win on Saturday, a 9-4 game on Sunday. And these were like postseason bouts. You go back and look at just kind of how the scoring broke down. You know, WKU had to play 4 in the top of the 5th on Saturday. And kind of held, you know, New Mexico State back from coming back in that one. Then WKU scored 4 in the top of the 7th on Sunday to extend their lead. Big 2-run double from Morgan Sharp that kind of highlighted that inning and really just kind of, you know, it was too much for the Aggies to come back from in that one. But still plenty of fireworks in this one. 9 combined home runs in the series. You knew there was going to be a lot of big ones out there in Las Cruces. But
it's always interesting to see, like, a team that goes on the road, especially in Las Cruces, where we know it's really difficult to play and get adjusted to. Always interesting to see that road team coming back and after losing that first game of the series, and this can be in baseball as well, going on the road, losing that first game can be a real kind of almost feel like a dagger at times. And for them to be able to bounce back in the way they did on Saturday and Sunday is huge and shows what this team is really all about.
Yeah. And I look back to, again, you know, I'm just kind of thinking mentality wise, as you get into a conference tournament scenario, we've seen this 2 years in a row now with Liberty, where they've lost an early, you know, their first game or an early game in the tournament and had to fight out of that loser's bracket. Those are the kind of series you're going to look back on and say, you know, you learned to kind of stay resilient and bounce back from a game that just didn't go your way, and you're able to kind of stack some more wins. So yeah, big series win for WKU. And I think too, looking back to the way they started conference play, you know, they start with a sweep, they get swept by Jack State, you had another sweep, so they kind of stopped the roller coaster a little bit, started again stacking some wins, solidifying their spot there at the number 4 spot. But looking around the rest of the league, Liberty picked up another series win against Delaware this past weekend. Clutch grand slam off the bat of Bryn McManus on Sunday. Really kind of blew it open late in the game there. Sam Houston moved into a tie for second with the Lady Flames after a sweep of Middle Tennessee. What impressed me most about the Sam Houston team, and we'll talk about this more when I kind of preview my series to watch, Bearcat staff had a 1.27 team ERA in the series. So the combination of Tiffany Sanchez, Kendall Daniel, the return of Abigail Young, I'll talk a little bit more about that here in a bit. That really just kind of helped them a lot in this big series win. CUSA pitcher of the week, Kendall Daniel, she gave up just 1 earned run this week in 10.2 innings. Absolute nails in an 8-inning complete game. I mean, you stack her and Ryan Peterson's games against each other this past week. I mean, those are two of the most clutch pitching performances I think we've seen this year. 8-inning complete game effort, career high 10 strikeouts in those 8 innings. And it was a 2-1 game. And it was 2-1 for a good portion of that game.
Those games are so, as a pitcher, those games are so much different than having an 8-0 lead rather than having either a 0-0 tie scoreless game or up 1-0. Like, those are so much different just mentally wise as a pitcher.
Yeah,
pitching with a big lead or pitching with, you know, a tie game or one run lead. And definitely kudos to them.
Yeah. So, but yeah, my biggest one I'm watching this weekend, Sam Houston at Western Kentucky. Tops are 16-1 at home this year, 6-0 in league play. So a place that for years, you go back to 2019, I didn't pull the number, but I think their winning percentage is north of 800 when they're playing at home in league play. So it's going to be a big test for Sam Houston, but I think they've got a lot of momentum going on their side, 8-2 in their last 10 games. But the X factor in this one is pitching. We know where WKU ranks nationally in a lot of stats. We kind of highlighted that last week. But the Bearcats coming off some really impressive pitching performances this past week. Abigail Young, who led the league in ERA last year, pitched two games in the opening weekend of the season, got knocked out with an injury, hadn't come back until this past weekend. So that's obviously a huge asset for the Bearcats to have on top of two already very reliable arms in that pitching staff. Got touched up in her first start, but it's, you know, first time being out there in, you know, almost 2 months now. But you really are going to need her. Again, going back to my same conversation with needing a lot of pitching depth in this league to win the conference tournament, they're going to need her to make a run. So I think just watching her confidence continue to build, it's going to be a tough one this week against, WKU and a tops lineup that features four players with at least 6 home runs and 20 RBIs on the year. So a lot of power in this lineup. Jenna Blanton's seeing the ball like a beach ball right now, hitting 500 in league play. She's got, I didn't count them, but it felt like, you know, just looking through the game logging league play, it was just like multi-hit game. So she's serving as a huge catalyst for that offense right now. But the, you know, Bearcats lineup has its kind of quirks too. They like to lay down a lot of bunts, and when they get girls on base, it doesn't matter who it is. I mean, everyone gets involved. You know, yeah, lots of chaos on the base pass. But they have a couple sluggers like Veronica Harrison, Lamar transfer, Trisha Urotsky, who can take you deep. So there's a lot of elements to the same Houston lineup that I think can be really hard for a team to prepare for. So I'm excited to see how this one plays out. We get a couple other good ones too, but that one's kind of one that I highlighted for sure, just as a lot of these teams in those, you know, second to fourth spots continue to jockey for some really important seeding as we get closer to the conference tournament. But yeah, lots of fun times on the diamond, man.
It's crazy how we're, I mean, it's not April yet, but we're almost really a month and a half out from these conference tournaments.
I know. Yeah. I think we're like 5 weeks away from CUSA softball championship. So it is sneaking up for sure. But coming up in just a week, even less so, just a few days, we have the NCAA bowling regionals. And we're going to get a chance to talk to Gianna Brandolino. We have Elizabeth Kanzig on our staff interviewing her, and then we'll have Elizabeth hop on to help preview the rest of our teams playing in regionals. 8 teams going to the postseason. We have our automatic qualifier, and then again, for the second year in a row, 7 of the 8 at-large teams. So yeah, lots of love for the CUSA teams. Very excited to see who ends up going to Cleveland for the national championship. There's almost guaranteed to be at least one CUSA team, right? Gotta be. But appreciate you joining us to hear a little bit about what's going on the Diamond Sports. Enjoy our interview with Gianna Brandolino.
Joining us today on the CUSA Insider Podcast is Jacksonville State bowler Gianna Brandolino. Gianna, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, of course. All right, we can just go ahead and dive into a few questions. So as a freshman, you know, your first year, you've collected multiple regular season accolades. You've helped lead your team to a CUSA championship title, and you were named the conference tournament most valuable bowler. What has this season's success meant to you?
Yeah, going into the season, I feel like I knew that we were going to be a strong team and that we were going to have hopefully a good season, and I just wanted to contribute to it. As a freshman, I really didn't know what to expect going into like the first tournament of the season. But during the first tournament, our coaches decided to put all of like the newbies in. So myself, my freshman or the other freshman, And then we also have one girl named Abby, and she transferred here. So they decided to put us all in, and it was a little nerve-wracking, and it was a little bold by our coaches because, like, you don't know what's going to happen because of the nerves and everything. But I feel like that really set the season off on a good note because they put us in there and they weren't scared to trust us and all of that. So I feel like this season has meant a lot to me because of our coaches and because of the other girls and just the trust within the team, because I feel like there's not one person on this team that I wouldn't trust my life with. And even the coaches, like, I trust them fully, and no matter what, you just, like, yeah, just the family dynamic within us.
Yeah, I'm sure having such a close-knit group definitely helps. I know your guys' squad is pretty young, but what has it been like competing and learning from some of the older bowlers who have played there for at least a season or two?
Yeah, I feel like there's a few people on our team that definitely have taken the leader roles, and I feel like that's, like, sometimes people think that, like, someone being a leader isn't good on a team because they might take it over and just take control almost and, like, be like a control freak or something. But in reality, I feel like it's good to have that leader. And, like, we have a few of them, which they're not, like, actual leaders. They're just, like, when we need a person, they step up, and it's really nice to have them. But I feel like learning from the girls that have been here for a season already has been really nice, because it's nice to know that, like, they're kind of like our backbone, and if I ever need something, I can go to any of them and they'll help me or anything like that.
Yeah, for sure. What about your coaches? What's it been like learning from Shannon and Brian, two people who are so successful in the bowling world?
Yeah, I love it. I mean, they're two of my favorite people, and I mean, like, I feel like they were a big reason that I came to Jacksonville State. And I don't know, it's really exciting getting to learn from the best. And I feel like they can only help you. Like, they can't hurt you. They're here to give you all of the resources. They're here to just help you and help you get better and all of that.
Yeah, for sure. I guess you kind of touched on this already, but how much of an influence did they play into your decision to go to Jack State, and were they kind of just that main factor that made you realize, like, yeah, this is where I want to call home for the next 4 years?
Yeah, I feel like initially stepping onto campus, like, it already felt like home, because, like, I wouldn't call the campus small, but I wouldn't call it big. But where I grew up, it kind of was a smaller town, so it almost felt like exactly like home. And I really enjoy being down here in the South and it being warmer than up in Illinois, and getting to be outside throughout the year and not having to put on a coat or anything like that. But yeah, I think they made my decision, final. I think they were, like, the biggest thing, because I know how smart they are, and also I know how much they put an emphasis on, like, the family aspect of the team, and how, like, if there's anything within our team that, like, might be, like, a little iffy, they're going to confront it, and we're going to figure it out, and we're going to get through it, and it's going to be okay. And I feel like they're the biggest advocates for that, and it's just really nice knowing that even though I'm far away from home, they're, like, my second parents now, and I can just go over to their house whenever I want, and they'll be there for me, and they have their little doggies, and I get to play with the dogs and just everything.
Shannon was telling me about the dogs at the tournament, and they sound great. So at the CUSA tournament, that championship match was really tight. What was going through your mind in that final tiebreaker round?
Yeah, I feel like the only thing that kept going through my mind was to try and keep being there for my team, whether that was on the lanes, off the lanes, cheering, this or that, like, just to be there, be present in the moment, like, continuously putting everyone forward. And when it was my turn to bowl, go up and do what I can and hopefully get the job done. That's all that there was to it. Like, just focus on our processes. Like, I don't know, keep it simple almost.
For sure. Well, it definitely came together. You guys were able to get the job done and bring home that championship title. What do you think your team needs to do to carry that momentum into this next regional round?
Yeah, I feel like kind of just what I just said, just keeping things simple and keeping everything focused and really relying on all of the work that we've put in throughout the year, because that's something that we really focus in on, and making sure our practices are like good heavy set practices, and not just we're just going there just to throw the ball and just putting our shoes on. So I feel like just relying on all of the work that we've put in throughout the year and relying on each other and staying in our own little bubble, and I think we'll be okay.
Yeah. So you guys enter as the number one seed. That's a spot that you've held all season. Do you think that is adding an extra layer of pressure, or have you guys kind of gotten used to competing with that added expectation?
Yeah, I feel like we're all very grateful that we're the number one seed, and that throughout the entire year we've been lucky enough to like keep that ranking. But I feel like that doesn't change like who we are as a group, because even though we have been the number one seed and are the number one seed at this point in the season, it doesn't matter. We're the same as everyone else. We all just have to win a match or win two matches and make it through regionals into the final four. And so honestly, like, to me at least, I feel like being ranked number one is amazing, and we're still on the same level as everyone else, and we still have to keep winning matches. And so we just have to focus and stay in our own little bubble and not focus on that we're the one seed. So
yeah, for sure. So you guys are going to face the winner of Thursday's match between Carroll versus Fayetteville. How has the team been preparing for that opening match with, knowing not exactly who your opponent's going to be yet, but have you guys been doing anything in particular to prepare for that?
Yeah, so it's funny because I feel like at this point in the season, like, everyone's buckling down and working, but we've traveled 5 weekends in a row, and so this weekend we went to the beach and took a little breather before regionals, but we got back on Sunday and now we're practicing every day before, and we're just really focusing in and getting locked in, I guess.
That's awesome. A good beach vacation is always necessary.
Yeah.
So talking a little more specifically about your personal game, when did you first fall in love with bowling?
Yeah, so my parents actually met in a bowling alley, so I kind of grew up in the bowling alley. And it's funny because both sets of my grandparents used to be on a league team together, and then my dad would bowl with his brother. And one day, my mom was never really a bowler. She cheered in gymnastics and more of that kind of stuff, but one day she came into the bowling alley to watch my grandparents bowl, and she saw my dad, and she said that she thought that he was cute or something. And then, I don't know. So I kind of grew up in the bowling alley. And when I was younger, I tried lots of different sports and everything, but bowling was kind of the only one to stick with me. And ever since then, like, I've been competing since I was 8 years old. And ever since then, it's just been history.
That's so cute. I would definitely watch a bowling love story movie. So kind of going off of that, did you always know that you wanted to be a collegiate bowler, or is that something that you kind of decided a little bit later on?
Yeah, no, I feel like college was always the goal at the end of the road. I mean, I feel like growing up and bowling for all of, like, we have smart money. So we get scholar, like, if you win a tournament, you get scholarships towards college and everything. So just kind of doing that and getting my name out there and getting to be seen and everything like that, I feel like the end goal is to go on tour and to bowl professionally, but a different goal is always to go to college and go to a big bowling college. And yeah.
You definitely chose a good spot for that. So do you have any routines or habits that you rely on to kind of stay locked in on match day or leading up to match day?
I feel like I have like little things that I do that I don't know if it's like a superstition or if it's just habit, but like, I don't know. I feel like I always have to put my jersey on before my skirt and like just certain like little things like that. But I don't think there's anything like really like routine that I do, because like when we travel, we usually eat hotel in the breakfast. So if I eat, or if I eat something the first day and I bowl good, then I have to eat that the second day and the third day or something like that. But I don't know. I don't feel like there's anything too big that I do that like has to get done. Like even if I don't eat, like if they don't have eggs one day and I don't get to eat, that doesn't mean I'm going to bowl bad. Like, but it's just like little things that I just do out of, I guess, habit. But yeah.
Yeah. How do you bounce back after a tough shot or a tough game?
I feel like individually, like bowling individually, it's a lot harder than when bowling with my team, because even if I go up there and throw a bad shot, I know I have my teammates to bounce back on, and they'll be there right there for me, still cheering for me and still knowing and having confidence in me, even though I threw one bad shot. And I feel like that's how it is for anyone. If anyone goes up there and throws a bad shot, it's not like they're going to come back and we're all going to be like, oh my goodness, how dare you? Like, it's going to be okay. And you come back and we all love each other and it is what it is. And you go up there and make sure to throw the next one better.
All right. One last question before we let you go. What's something that maybe your teammates or fans don't know that might surprise them?
I don't know. I'm not a very interesting person. I just bowl.
Hey, that's fair. I feel like the story behind your parents meet is really interesting. So maybe that can be your fun fact for the fans out there.
Yeah, I mean, my brother and I share the same birthday, but we're not twins. And our birthday,
that's cool.
And our birthday is December 31st, so we're New Year's babies.
Oh, hey, that's cool. I was going to say, if it's coming up, we can give you a birthday shout out, but we'll give you like a super, super early birthday shout out.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Thanks so much to Gianna Brandolino for taking time out of her busy schedule preparing for regionals in the National Collegiate Bowling Championship. But let's get to it. Again, joined here by my guest, Elizabeth Kanzeg, making her debut on the podcast. Elizabeth, let's dive into a lot of these regionals. Obviously, we had the selection last week, 19 teams going for the National Collegiate Women's Bowling Championship, of which Conference USA has won the last two, Jacksonville State and Youngstown State, getting 7 of the 8 at-large berths for the second straight year. Let's get into this. First off, how was Harahan, Louisiana? How was the bowling championship?
It was unlike anything I have ever experienced before. I've done some interesting sports in my life, but I will say I think bowling takes the cake for the most unique. It was a really cool experience. I, honest to God, had no idea what to expect, but I mean, the energy was high every single day. Those girls came in ready to compete, so it was really exciting. Some long days for sure. We had a lot of tiebreaker matches that we had to go into, and you know, just a few extended periods, but you know what, it ended up being a lot of fun, and it was really cool to see how they compete.
Yeah, you truly saw it all, format wise with that Jacksonville State Arkansas really? State championship match. I also heard it's loud at the championship.
Oh yeah, I mean, I feel like the acoustics in a bowling alley, you really can't say that they're good ever, but when you're in there and everyone's cheering during bowling, so you know, like softball, they're in the dugout doing their chants, they're doing the same thing in bowling, but all at the same time, lane to lane to lane, so you hear a lot, and you know what, you kind of pick up on some of the chants. I don't, because I'm a little deaf, but
normal people do, and you sing them to yourselves during the day. So,
well, and I know I was talking to Chris Mikoski, who did a fantastic job broadcasting our bowling championship, and he made a joke. It was like, you know, when you get out of the wave pool as a kid and you still feel the motion, he's like, that's how it felt with hearing pins fall. He's like, I could do without hearing another pin fall for another year until next year's bowling championship.
Absolutely, especially at the beginning, because they set up all the lanes and then all of the pins drop at once while they're like setting them up for play. And it literally just sounds like the roof is collapsing from above you, and you're just hoping for the best and don't wish to have a thought to yourself, because you're not able to think in those 10 seconds that it takes.
Well, it's, yeah, certainly a unique championship environment. Indeed. Yes.
It's fun, though.
So, all right, let's start at the top. So we have all four of these seeded teams in each of these regionals. So we have seeded 1 through 4. They're the top seeds in each of these. We'll start at number one, Jacksonville State, the national champion from 2 years ago, Conference USA champion this year, grabs the number one seed in the Lansing, Michigan regional. They're also joined by Youngstown State, who'll be taking on NCA&T in the first their first match of this regional. First off, just how was it being around that team at the championship? And I mean, do you think there's anybody who can stop the Gamecocks right now?
Jacksonville State definitely has a confidence to them. I feel like you can see it as they approach competition. And head coach Shannon O'Keefe, she's a delight to be around. And like, she comes in with such confidence. Like, she doesn't seem nervous before matches. You know, I feel like sometimes before a game or before a match in any sport, sometimes the coach seems a little on edge or anything like that. And she is just, she always walks in ready to go, super chatty. And I respect that about her, because she just seems locked in, and I love that. Yeah, it's definitely a confident team, and they have proven that they deserve to be in that number one spot. So, you know, I feel like upsets happen, and Arkansas State definitely gave them a run for their money in our conference championship. So I wouldn't put it past the Red Wolves to say, you know, it's entirely possible. We might see some crazy upset, and that would be, I would be exciting, you know. I think the bowling world would love to see some kind of big transitions in this bracket just for the entertainment value. But overall, I think that Jack State's definitely the team to beat, and they have the talent to back it. So it'll be interesting to see how it plays out.
Yeah, for sure. Well, and I think that, yeah, it's always good when you have a coach like that that has that composure, because I think it spills over into the players, right? Because they're the ones that are probably feeling a lot of the nerves in that championship environment, or maybe not. Maybe they're all just, you know, silent killers out there. It obviously worked out well for them in Louisiana. It's worked out well for them all season. But yeah, you got Youngstown State staring at you at the other side of the bracket. Again, these are each of our two, you know, previous national champions. So Youngstown State, you know, going for that title defense this year, will certainly be hungry for an upset of the Gamecocks if they potentially meet here in the second round. So Jacksonville State facing the winner of Carroll and Fayetteville State. That'll be 9 a.m. Friday, April 3rd. And then Youngstown State will play. They're also at 9 a.m. on Friday. The winners of those matches will meet later in that afternoon. And then we'll just kind of, you know, I won't go through all the, you know, double elimination format, but championship will occur Saturday afternoon. And then winner of that will head to the national championship in Parma Heights, Ohio, just outside of Cleveland, which I'm sure you're somewhat familiar with as a
as a native.
Yeah,
kind
yeah.
of. Actually, I think I've been to that specific bowling alley before. So
nice.
Yeah.
All right. Well, maybe we get a chance to send you back there to go see whoever gets crowned national champion. We'll go on to the Rochester, New York regional, number two seed Vanderbilt. Also familiar with winning a national championship. They won in 2023 prior to CUSA adopting bowling. So they're the top seed in this regional. They also have Sam Houston in this one taking on Maryville in the first round game there. So Vanderbilt, Sam Houston, anything that you kind of observe from those teams at the national championship, or sorry, at the conference championship?
Well, I mean, for the national championship, I definitely think that this is going to be comfortable territory for the two of them. You know, Vandy, this is their 20th consecutive tournament appearance. And then Sam Houston, 14th time in the last 16 years that they're making it to the national championship, or well, for the tournament. So I definitely think that both teams are going to be entering in comfortable waters. So I think it'll be good to see what they do. It was definitely interesting watching Vanderbilt, another team that I feel like exudes a lot of confidence on the lanes. But I mean, we did get to see a fairly decent upset at our conference championship. La Tech upset, number 5 La Tech upset the number 2 seed in the Commodores. So that was interesting. So I'm sure, you know, having that kind of weighing over them, they're going to enter this championship tournament a little hungry. So kind of excited to see what they do with that and how they use that chip on their shoulder to kind of enter these next few matches. And yeah, Sam Houston also played really well. They played into round 5, I believe. So excited to see what they can do.
Yeah. Yeah. Two teams that, again, like you pointed out, are very familiar with the postseason. I know John Williamson at Vanderbilt, longtime head coach, we'll definitely have his girls ready. Sam Houston, very familiar with, again, that postseason environment. So excited to see who comes out of that one. Similar time frame in terms of regionals. They'll start their regional journeys on Friday morning, and then championships will occur Saturday afternoon. Moving on to Pittsburgh regional, number 3 seed, Arkansas State. You've already kind of alluded to them, a very interesting squad that nearly, I mean, had the Gamecocks on the ropes in that title match, looked really impressive in the conference championship. And then CUSA newcomer Nebraska, who is a storied bowling program in the past, bringing a lot of that prestige to the league to kind of build up what's already the undoubted strongest league, strongest bowling league in the nation. So they get their chance to kind of get back. It's been a bit since the Huskers have won a national championship, have been in a lot of national championship matches when you look at the last 10 years or so. So again, when we talk about experience, there's a lot of past, championship experience here. But for the Red Wolves, I think probably one of the teams that is on the biggest upset watch when you look ahead to being crowned a national champion. What worked so well for them in Louisiana, and how much momentum do you think they're taking into regionals?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's a gritty team. They were kind of just battling the entire time. They had a few long matches, a lot of long days. They were one of those teams that I just felt were always just there for the battle. And head coach Justin Kostick's really fun to watch. He's one of those kind of interactive coaches. You'll see him pacing and he gets pretty fired up. So he's a fun one to watch for sure. And I'm excited to see what he can do with his squad. I think so. They've been national collegiate runners up 3 times in the past 5 years. So wow. I think that's going to be, a heavy weight that they're going to bring in with them, because I don't think that's a position that they're going to want to be in again. And I think, maybe this is their year that they can finally just step past that barrier and bring back that title. So excited to see what they can do. And I mean, like I said, they're a gritty team. So I think that they'll definitely be entering with some confidence and just a little chip from the CUSA championship.
Yeah, big chips. I mean, yeah, from the CUSA championship. And then again, to your point, being the silver medalist that many times, like you think that, all right, maybe this is the year we get over the hump a little bit. We're excited to see what the Red Wolves can do, what kind of noise they can make in Pittsburgh, trying to make their case to get to Cleveland. All right, we'll wrap this up. The Arlington Regional, so right down the road from us, number 4 seed Louisiana Tech will take on, and I'm sorry, I didn't even, I totally jumped over the matchups here in Pittsburgh. So number 3 Arkansas State will take on the winner of St. Vincent and Belmont Abbey in that opening round match. And then Nebraska and Duquesne will face each other in their first match in the regional. Louisiana Tech, again, the number 4 national seed, top seed in this Arlington regional, taking on Bryant, and then Wichita State against Newman, both on Friday morning. Wichita State, we saw they were kind of the underdog story last year in the conference championship, made some noise in the national tournament as well. Louisiana Tech, you know, a team that frankly I'm not as familiar with, just because that, you know, again, in this league, when you have so many teams at the top, you know, someone's got to get left out when you get to the regionals and the, you know, the four teams that go to the national championship. But they do earn this number four national seed. So what do you think kind of makes this Bulldogs team, you know, so formidable? And then do you see Wichita State kind of being able to maybe channel what they the magic they had last year and making some noise here in Arlington?
Yeah, for sure. I think that the Bulldogs definitely earned that top seed in the Arlington Regional. That's definitely another gritty team. You know, they came in number five seed, not a bad spot to be, but they had a couple really strong upsets that took them almost all the way to the championship match. Really exciting team to watch. They get super, super hyped up. So they're definitely a fun one, but they had that sweep over Vanderbilt, which was a big upset. And then they also had a sweep over Nebraska. So they're capable of doing it for sure. So I'll be excited to see how they take that momentum heading into this regional tournament. And yeah, Wichita State was one of those ones. It was definitely a more emotional end to their regular season, watching them in the conference championship. So you know, they had that strong run last year, so it'll be good to see, you know, what they do going into regionals and how they kind of, you know, utilize the conference to kind of drive them going forward. So it'll be fun to watch.
Okay. All right. So yeah, Bulldogs already experienced with kind of knocking off the big dogs in the conference championship, hoping to punch their ticket through to Arlington Regional and get a chance to maybe take down one of those teams again in Cleveland in the Final Four. So, and I don't even know if I'm allowed to say Final Four for bowling, but I know that's what, yeah.
Well,
informally we can call it, yeah, the bowling Final Four. But awesome. Well, super excited for all this action. Again, I think all the regionals pretty much following the same format. So they'll begin, all of our teams will begin Friday morning, and then zooming out to, or I guess zooming ahead to Saturday afternoon is when we will find out who gets crowned the regional champions and who'll be headed to Parma Heights, Ohio. So for the dates for that, April 10th and 11th at Yorktown Lanes, hosted by Mid-American Conference and the Greater Cleveland Sports Commission. Want to let you give a plug there. I know that you're familiar with working with them.
Heck yeah. Shout out to my previous intern employers. Love y'all.
Awesome. Well, Elizabeth, thank you so much for coming onto the podcast, making your debut. I know we, you know, here in your final months in your internship, we're finally getting you on. So took too long, but really excited for all the bowling action coming up this weekend. Yeah, I mean, CUSA bowling, it's, you know,
it's exciting. It is big stuff. And you know what? If you've been sleeping on it, now's your time to lock in, because CUSA bowling is legit.
Facts. Period. Yeah. What a way to sign it off. But awesome. Well, thank you guys for joining us for another episode of CUSA Insider. As always, you can follow us on social media on X and Instagram at CUSA Insider Pod, and then listen to us wherever you find your podcast, whether that's Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and please go watch us on YouTube, where our beautiful faces are on here every week, giving you all the news you need around Conference USA. But again, thank you so much for joining another episode of CUSA Insider, the official podcast of Conference USA. I'm Josh Jonas, signing off.